The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The Homance Chronicles.
The female equivalent of a bromance.
So many poor choices.
But so many good times.
But so many poor choices.
It's a Monday. It's close to spring Monday. It's post-daylight savings time Monday. How are you doing? Checking in.
Well, I'd be better if you'd said, this is the Homance Chronicles and I'm Sarah. And then I'd say, I'm Nicole. And
we're past pleasantries at this point. Clearly, that's how I'm doing.
If you're a first time listener,
this is nothing new. Buckle up.
I don't know.
I guess like part of me had a dream that we redid our intro and it was included. So all we had to do was just start talking. But maybe that was, I don't know. I don't know where that came from today.
I wasn't sure if you knew that I hit the record button. Like,
Are you just asking me about my day?
Like, no. Thinking like maybe we hadn't hit record yet. But,
This is how the time change has impacted me. I don't know what to do with myself.
I'm sorry that it had such a dramatic effect on you. Yesterday, which was day of time change for based on the fact that we're recording on a Monday. Mm-hmm. I have a clock next to my bed. It's an alarm clock. That's basically its sole purpose, right? And it has the time zones. And so you'd think that I would have had figured out which time zone was mine, but I have not. And or just because it's the time zone doesn't necessarily mean that it knows when it's daylight savings. You know what I'm saying? Because it's not like your phone that's getting like a satellite signal. Right. Like, yeah. So I roll over, look at that clock, and I'm like, oh, plenty of time.
Oh, it's 9:30. Looking sharp. It is not.
So then 10:30. I get a text because my mom and her boyfriend were going to my new house to help me there. I get a text from them saying, like, you know, what time they're leaving or whatever. And then I look at my phone time. And I'm like, oh no.
Frick.
Whoops-a-daisy.
Okay. When I was younger, I kind of recall daylight savings time happening on a Sunday to Monday. Did they change that to Saturday to Sunday at some point in our youth?
I always remember it being over the weekend because can you imagine everybody trying to get their life in order to go to work on time and
100% no.
Go to school on time and stuff on a Monday? No.
Sarah's world.
I'm pretty sure it was always over the weekend because remember when you would get that extra hour and you, as a kid, you were like, yes, I could stay up later.
Oh yeah. I always wanted to stay up so fucking late. Why did I do that to me?
So otherwise, I don't think that I really have had too much of an effect other than slight panic mode. But it all worked out. It was all fine.
Oh, that's good. Good for you. Proud of you. I've got a cat on my lap who is just hurting for attention. Apparently his 4.5+ hours of me touching him today wasn't enough. He needs more.
Emma got some special treatment today too, since I have a painter here working on patching up all my holes.
And paint rips, just full on sheets of paint ripped off the wall. No big deal.
Yeah. 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 So yeah, I was trying to keep Emma out of the way. And so she got a little face massage before the podcast started.
Oh, sweet.
I know. I was like, sweet, what a rough life.
Angel. Yeah. I can't wait to come back as one of my own pets. That's what I hope.
Did you see the video of the lady who was like, in another life, I need to come back as a tree?
No.
She was like, this is too much. I need a break for like a couple hundred years. She's like, I'm making dinner, then washing the dishes, but I had to grocery shop to get it. Then I had to, you know, and she has kids. Mm-hmm. So she's like doing like drop off, blah, blah, blah. And so she goes through this list of just like everyday things that we all are responsible for. And she's like, I just said all of that and I'm exhausted. And we haven't even talked about my actual job. Like, she's like, whoever's listening, I need you to know I have to come back as a tree.
Yeah, at this point,
your girl needs rest.
Yes, for like a while. I get it. I'm here. I like that methodology. Just hang out around for like a century. Get exhausted and tired of just pure peace. If that's even a thing. Maybe restless?
Mm-hmm. Mm. But yeah, that was funny.
That'd be beautiful. That is funny. So. Apparently, in trend with that comment. So I use the phrase toodaloo a lot at work. I don't know why. It's just something I use to sign off on, you know, audio calls or video chats or whatever. And apparently there's a lady online doing the snarky PC corporate America kind of act, and she uses that phrase toodaloo at the end of her, like, to sign off from her videos, and I got called out on that for today, so I have to go watch that later.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's like a TikTok creator or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm like, I've been using this phrase for quite a while.
Yeah. She stole your jam.
Yeah, it's fine as long as it's a good reflection of my beliefs, then I'll keep using it. But if she kind of turns into a dummy, I'm going to have to bail out.
Yeah. I'm sure there's plenty of other ways to say goodbye, or you could do what I do and never say goodbye. I just hit leave.
For me, that's not enough closure.
Nope. Everyone else in the meeting, everyone else is like, bye, bye. I just leave. I Irish exit out of meetings.
Hilarious. See, I don't know, I guess like my methodology is, if I say goodbye, it's like a Ouija board. I close it out and then I can't get homework from it. Like, that topic is done, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm barely present while I'm in the meeting. Most of the time I'm trying to get away with not having to say anything.
I don't blame you.
And so then when it comes time for goodbye, I haven't said anything the whole time. Like, now all of a sudden I'm going to be like, toodaloo. Like, no, just gracefully exit.
Like a fart in the wind.
Well,
are we ready?
I think so. Okay. I'm actually hoping that this story intrigues me enough to get this song out of my head.
Oh God, what song is it? Are you going to plague us with it? Please plague us with it.
Well, I mean, maybe I can like look it up on my phone and play it.
You can't sing it?
No. Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not. You got a good voice.
I do not.
Uh-huh.
I do not.
Just no, are you kidding me?
Yeah. It's a song called Music Taste. And here, let me see if I can get into this. You hear?
I feel. Yeah, that was really terrible. It's like all looks the same. But a girl, you must not be hidden. Nope, I have no idea what the song is. You guys missed Nicole lip syncing.
Yeah. Well, I sent the song to you. It's
It's
by Annie Tracy.
Yeah.
And I have the most ridiculous story of how I came across it. Why did I see a reel of T.I. and Tiny's daughter singing it?
Not you. Not you.
And apparently Annie Tracy is on Tiny's record label or something, or signed to her in some capacity.
So funny.
And so Tiny and T.I.'s daughter, who was like 3 or 4, was belting this song out. And I could never. Like, this girl is insane. She's a toddler. And so I had to go, you know, track it down. And now it's been stuck in my head.
Well, let's go. Let's get into it. See if we can. I don't know if I'll be able to do a fuck call for you, but we're going to try. So, as a reminder, it's International Women's Month. I'm going to say month, not just day. And so we're looking at those ladies who changed our lives, like heavily impacted our lives. So I chose this hoe as an honor and tribute to my lack of sleep from this time change and the need for extra coffee.
Well, but this
your face.
This is not, well, because you're not setting it up positively.
Well, there's nothing wrong with saying I'm exhausted and I need more coffee.
I know, but now you're making it sound like it's this lady's fault.
No, it isn't. It certainly isn't. She's the reason we have coffee and a perfect experience because of it.
Okay.
So we are going to go down memory lane with Amelie Auguste Melita Libscher, a.k.a. Melita Benz, the German entrepreneur who invented fucking paper coffee filters. Like, a woman did this. And it's so huge because coffee filters are used for so many different things, not just coffee. So this woman's invention created this huge churn in the coffee industry. And the company Melita is actually still active today. Her family still runs it today. And she was just, she's legendary. She's iconic. And probably not super familiar with her in the States because it's more of a European brand, but we'll get into it. So she was born in Dresden, Germany. And at that time, Dresden became part of Germany, like right as she was born. And it's important to note that this area, this region, the city, whatever you want to call it, became kind of like more modern than some of the surrounding villages. So they had a lot more accessibility to like industrial type things, you know, materials, trends, etc. So setting it up. So she was born to Carl and Bridget. Her dad was a publisher and bookseller. Her grandparents owned a brewery, and the whole family was apparently full of entrepreneurs. There isn't a ton about how she was brought up or her education, but they do say that she did meet her husband, Hugo Benz, B-E-N-T-Z, in the end of the 1900s. 1890s.
I was like,
We were born at the end of the 1900s.
I was like, wait a second.
Frick. So they got married and they had 3 children. First being Willie. He was born in 1899. Second, Horst, H-O-R-S-T, born in 1904. And their daughter, Herta, H-E-R-T-A, born in 1911. She was a housewife above all, and she took care of her home, husband, and children. So she essentially kind of like didn't necessarily have like assigned duties, but one of the things she did every morning, like all of us, roughly 63% of Americans do, check that stat on the Googs. Every morning she'd get up and look forward to her cup of coffee.
And see, this is the thing. Mm-hmm. Coffee in the morning offers a routine, and for a lot of people, it does give them something to look forward to. I personally don't like coffee.
Well, aren't you allergic to it?
I it causes some inflammation. Yes.
So yes, allergies.
Yeah. But like I don't even like the smell of it or anything. I do enjoy tea. I have come, you know, I turned a corner a while ago on having hot teas, but it's still not that like ritualistic thing about having a coffee. So I haven't found like something in the morning where I'm like, let me get up and get going so I can get my coffee.
Let me get up and get cozy.
Like, yeah. I haven't found a good alternative for the only ritual.
I would say the only other alternative I have found to coffee is breakfast in the morning that is made of the tacos from last night. Like, there's a taco shop in the mobile station parking lot. It's a food truck. I love them. Those are my breakfast tacos. They are not in any way, shape, or form made for breakfast, but that's the only other thing that has been like, I should get out of bed now. Go do this.
I'm also super sensitive to caffeine. Yeah. So, like, if I take even just one Excedrin, I won't sleep that night unless like I have to take it before noon. And even then I'll be up till like 1 or 2 a.m. and be like, why can't I fall asleep? And it's because of the minute amount of caffeine that I'm very sensitive to.
And in all fairness, caffeine is something that does in fact create a deficit after a while. Like, you need it in order to fully function. So that's something to consider. Like, caffeine first rush, everybody that's like virgin to caffeine would likely experience that effect, but people who are exposed to it over and over and over again have a higher tolerance, yada yada yada. I digress.
Well, I was just commenting on the fact that for the 40-ish percent of us that don't drink coffee in the morning, I have yet to find anybody's like, yay, I'm getting out of bed ritual, you know, like, let me go juice my celery. Like, no, you know,
there are people out there, I'm sure, love their Diet Cokes in the morning. But yes, I understand.
I can't do Diet Coke either, though, because of the caffeine.
Note, do not feed Nicole caffeine.
Well, I mean, it's all right. Like, if I was to have a coffee, I would probably be buzzing for like a full 24 hours.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
drink makes me have the shakes.
Well, the only thing I've ever watched you consume that's got like a large amount of potential to jazz you up is the B12, the liquid IVs that we had that one day we went out tubing. That was it.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to get a natural high.
Oh, it's so funny.
From so B12.
Funny. B12. Really jazzed you up, too. All right. Back to our lady. So she, and that's not a statistic of the globe. It's just Americans. So it could be different in Europe and other countries, you know, but.
Yeah, but they have like espresso and they drink it all throughout the whole day. And
this is true. This is very true. Italians are, you can attest to that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So one of her duties was making coffee in the morning for her and her husband. And making coffee back then wasn't what it is today, obviously. There were porcelain percolators and fabric filters, but these methods of coffee weren't ideal, mostly because they left grounds in the coffee and they were a bitch to clean up. Like, they kept saying like it was unhygienic, which I have to imagine is like a translation thing where it's not necessarily like not hygienic. It's just a mess, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was generally accepted across the board that those who were like in the grips of coffee and caffeine would in fact be consuming the grounds with the coffee. And Melitta hated it more than anything else. Instead of coffee having the hopeful impact of basically making her feel refreshed and focused and ready to start her day, she was getting more and more annoyed and furious by the fact that she couldn't have one without eating the grounds with it. Like, it's like sand in your food. It just sucks.
Yeah. I'm like, I get it, girl. Texture.
Yeah. And then on top of that, the copper pot she used had to be fucking cleaned out every single time. And every day it was more of a chore than coffee was worth for her. Like, the balance mm-hmm. started to happen. So a majority of the sources I went to basically made it seem like, oh, one day she just ripped a piece of her son's plotting paper out of his notebook, poked holes in it, and it just worked. Well, it's actually not the case. She did, in fact, try several different versions of some sort of contraption to test out and try to see if she couldn't make a clear cup of coffee. And then this last round of testing with, again, her son's plotter paper, and it was a tin or a copper pot that had holes poked in it. That morning when she tried it, she put the grounds in like you do a traditional coffee. You put the container in, you put the paper in, you put the grounds in, you pour the water in. And so she spent, like I said, lots of times testing materials and techniques to produce a clear cup of coffee to enjoy, but there wasn't much on those days to report on. So her son Horst, who took up running the company after her and her husband retired with his brother, decades later in 1949, in like some sort of, I can't remember if it was an article or whatever, he was quoted saying, she had excellent taste in coffee and was often irritated by the grounds in her cup. So ultimately one morning she did, just as I mentioned above, took the piece of paper, stuck it in, some say old tin, like I said. So the coffee brewed, went right through the paper into the cup below, and poof, she was finally able to enjoy a cup of coffee that was clear and flavorful and didn't have grounds in it. Also, it was really quick to clean up. She never had to actually rinse anything out with coffee grounds. She was able to take all the grounds in the paper and pitch it and didn't have to deal with it, period. So after this first experience of what she called the perfect coffee enjoyment, she decided to test it out with her acquaintances and her friends by supposedly hosting coffee afternoons. Not your jam. I can imagine these people didn't sleep for hours and hours and hours into the night. So in June of 1908, her coffee filter with curved and indented bottom and slanting extraction pores in combination with the filtered paper, so there was two components to this, had been awarded legal protection as a registered utility good by the Imperial Patent Office. So it was officially published in the Patentblatt, which is the German word for newspaper. The Imperial Patent Office in Berlin granted her the patent for the filter paper, and she and her husband were soon in business. So her husband was around. He was also a bookseller, and he had his own, or he was a publisher, and he had his own, what's it called? Not library, but like bookstore. So they started the company and called it M. Benz. They began with 73 pfennigs, which is old German currency. It was like a penny or something like that. It lost a lot of its value. And in 2002, they switched over to the euro. So I don't really have a good way of calculating like what it would cost today. But I imagine 73 pfennigs was probably close to like $100, maybe, this day and age. That was the capital they had, and they started with four employees: her husband Hugo and sons Willie and Horst, and herself. And their headquarters was their family's 5-room apartment.
Wow, 5 rooms in an apartment.
Oh yeah, Europeans, man.
Yeah, yeah. So, when you were mentioning that she was doing basically user testing with her friends in the afternoons, it reminded me that my grandma said, now my grandma is not European. I mean, she is descendants of Europeans, but like lived in America, obviously. She said that her like neighborhood, like the ladies in the neighborhood would get together for coffee clutches.
Oh, so the tradition.
Those are
lives
like
on.
Afternoon gossip sessions.
Yes.
And my grandma said she did not go. She was better than to just gossip. But
oh, come on. Gossip is the form of sisterhood.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about how gossip even came to be, which I should do in a different episode. And how it even, the word shifted and it turned into like a negative connotation, but it's really not.
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's got its own history. But yeah, so when you were saying that they would have afternoon coffee meetups, I'm like, it's the origination of the coffee clutch.
Yes, we're going to claim it. Claiming it here. That's hilarious. Okay, so the first filters were actually produced in her home. Her and her sons made deliveries with a handcart, and her husband set up a display in his show windows in the shop to show the public how the technology worked. Excuse me. Later, his business picked up. He actually did assign his demonstration role to what they called demonstration ladies, which is something he learned while he was working at a department store as a manager. It was a new thing, and people had to see it to be convinced of it. And Anika Van Hollen states later, she is a Melitta Group spokeswoman, so somebody from the actual company currently. Okay, so dates from 1910 up till like the 50s, there's it kind of like it took me a minute to figure out a succinct timeline, so bear with me. Not all this happens at once, but I'm gonna try to go in order. So in 1910, she invented the first round of pour overs and took it to the International Hygiene Exhibition in Dresden. Filtration apparatus, a novel Melitta Benz invention, garnered gold and silver awards at that fair. And then later, I don't know if it was in 1910 or 11, some say it happened before the fair in Dresden, some say it happened after. She and her husband took the product to the Leipzig trade fair, which had targeted the owners of like the houseware stores across Germany. So this is pre-war. Remember, they split the country in half with a wall.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was after this. So these organizations absolutely loved it. Horst recalled later that the porcelain pour-over coffee makers were attracting public attention. At that fair, they sold over 1,200 units. And they were $1.25 mark each that year. So, you know, 1.25 marks, again, the German currency. That's like not a lot, but it is at the same time. I feel like it was more luxurious to have something like this than not, especially because it was disposable.
Yeah.
That's the key.
Yeah.
So the company after that grew to eight whole people in 1912. So remember, 1914 is when the First World War started. Her husband and eldest son were drafted into the army. So her brother, Paul, helped run the company during that time. But now, at this stage, her husband wasn't working. It was really up to the company to fund and like finance the family. So they expanded the operation to produce paper cartons. I don't know what they looked like. I don't understand what that meant. I have no clue. Couldn't figure it out. But they expanded. So in 1918, when the war ended, they ended up hiring new staff and expanded to more extensive production facilities, where the team of people grew to 80. So they left Dresden, moved to Prussia, which was soon to be part of Germany. And they had multiple spots, like multiple factories at that stage, because they were producing multiple things. So cut to, 1925 is when they actually introduced a signature red and green packaging to protect themselves from imitators. So this is where they kind of became a corporation, and they were no longer just a small group of people trying to do something. They had things rolling, moving and grooving.
80 people is pretty significant. I mean, there's a lot of tech startups that have 20 or less.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah.
So in 25, they introduced their signature packaging. It just continued. So they pressed on. The demand for filters in 1928 was so high that her employees ended up working double shifts to keep up with demand. This prompted her to have not only a positive impact on the coffee drinkers, but a massive impact on her employees. She ensured they all had benefits such as Christmas bonuses and paid vacations. She even established Melita Aid for employees who were financially distressed, which is actually still available for them today to take advantage of.
Wow.
I know. So 1930s, the Christmas bonus. 1932, the number of vacation days went from 6 to 15. That's how fucking many vacation days I get today in 2024 as a woman of corporate America.
Mm-hmm.
In America.
Mm-hmm.
Like, blown away. And she officially decreased the work week to 5 days. Just
wow.
Iconic. This is also the same year the corporation invented Melita lettering and the logo was adopted. So they're just progressing. In 1936 is when she improved on her design and the paper filter to make it a conical shape to make it, you know, what it is today. She actually did retire before that time. She retired about, I think it was in 31, maybe. Maybe, I don't know if they gave me the right dates in here. There was all, they were all over the map. But she and her husband, by 1938, had fully retired and left their sons in charge. She was, however, still continuing to improve on her designs, patenting and selling merchandise in significant markets all over the world. So, World War II. Nazis, they're in Germany. They did have a brief 12-year gap in operations during this time after they retired. So eventually the company decided to cooperate with Nazis. And in 1941, they started producing military supplies as a National Socialist model plant. After the war, though, I'm lying to you. Hang on. So during that time, manufacturing was halted and factories were instructed to produce war-related commodities. Melita as a whole, the plant in Minden, was requisitioned by Allied troops at the end of the war and used as military barracks for the next 12 years. Production departments were moved as feasible within Minden, including local bars and restaurants. So that was one of the plants that was taken over. The other,
yeah, I was going to say, I don't think that they made a decision to briefly.
No,
they were told.
Facetious, yes.
Yeah.
So after the war, the company contributed to a program that aimed to compensate victims of the Nazis' forced labor policies. So they were not having it. Even if the Nazi party tried, they weren't going to do it. Let's see. So Hugo, her husband, passed away in January of 46, just several months after the war ended, and Melita Benz observed wartime reconstruction and the start of like this massive boom for the company because, again, you know, they were not producing anything. War is over. They can get back to living pseudo luxury. So her company did end up grossing 4.7 million DM, which is something marks, Deutschmarks, in 1950. Again, they didn't switch over to Euro until 2002. So in Porta Westfalisa, Porta, Porta, Westfalisa. So it's really, I don't know, essentially where she was, the business was growing and the company continued to improve on the coffee filters and their strategies for going to market and marketing them to people in not only Germany, but other countries. So customers in Germany were actually given 4 weeks to try out the new faster filters at home before having to pay for them. So that was kind of neat. Then the concept was revived in the 1950s when homemakers were allowed to try out the fast drip filter for 4 weeks before having to pay it or return it. Within a year, sales tripled. So,
yeah, because who's going to actually take the time to return it?
Exactly. Oh, I'll just pay for it. So, as per their trendy capabilities, they continued to watch the trends, and Melitta modified the filter design in the 50s, which was made of stonewash with a pastel finish, so they could start to kind of, I don't know if you recall, but some kitchen suites had pastel colors, and so they were keeping up with the times of all the appliance manufacturers.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, in the 50s, I think starting in the 50s, you started getting the avocado-colored fridges.
Yeah, yep.
And the pinkish-beige tile in the bathroom. And,
yep.
Yeah.
So, they also began to produce complete coffee sets at that time. And she was definitely contributing and participating, but her sons took the company over. I don't know what happened to her daughter. I could have looked it up, but she really wasn't involved as far as I could see with the company or the parents or anything like that. So it was interesting to see how she was just, you know, born and then that's it.
I'm sure that there's more to it. Like, it seems as though she'd be an advocate for her daughter getting an education.
Hopefully.
Or if she wanted her to, or if her daughter just wanted to be a housewife or whatever, like, sounds like that was going to be okay. Like, it just doesn't seem like they put a lot of pressure parameters on things. Yeah. Since the whole family was entrepreneurs, it was all kind of just like, you do you, boo.
Right. So, Melitta passed away on June 29th, 1950. I don't know what from. But she, her company clearly lives on. In 2018, the Melitta Group employed more than 4,000 people across the world and reported its revenue in 2017 as 1.5 billion euros or $1.8 billion. So a little bit more of the advertising campaigns that they did, which I found to be incredibly interesting. So from the 30s to the 60s, the original Melitta publicly publicity service provided free promotion materials for store displays and window dressings. The customer magazine Melitta Information presented the latest product sales and strategies. So in the 50s and 60s, they held annual shop window decoration contests and awarded prizes for the best design or most original displays. Each year had its unique motto, and in 52, the competition was called Coffee the Melitta Way. More aroma, one third saved. Melitta's first advertisement titled Discrepancies or Pity was shown in Berlin cinemas in 1938. Werner Fink, a cabaret artist, and Jupp Ernst, a designer, collaborated on the writing and design. The commercial for the new 102 fast drip filters was as follows. I'm reading verbatim. Of course, in the days when we still had real coffee, a good filter made sense. But today, yes, today more than ever, proper filtration is vital. Coffee made from corn, malt, or other substances can also taste good if prepared correctly. Melitta filters every type of coffee. Try it and see. Filtered coffee simply tastes better. So, appealing to post-war, because coffee made of corn or malt? No.
I was like, wait, did I miss something?
No.
Like.
No.
It's just low resources?
Yeah. So Melitta continued to expand through a series of acquisitions and product developments from just coffee filters, papers, and makers to household goods of all sorts, including vacuum cleaner bags, cleaning cloths, and sponges. At some point, Horst's vision of a well-laid table included porcelain sweets, cigar cigars and fruit juices, they continued to like acquire companies that would provide this perfect vision. And
I don't mind it. I mean, I obviously I'm not a huge fan of cigars, but I don't mind his aesthetic though.
No, not at all. So in 59, 9 years after her passing, they constructed a new paper factory in Minden, and the factory is still home to Europe's most advanced paper, or was home to the most advanced paper machine in that day. So overall, the company underwent enormous expansion during this time, and demand for goods quickly outstripped supply, and 30% of all employees were recruited from outside the country because local labor market was entirely depleted. Imagine. We can't get people to work for us because we do too much and we don't have enough locally. Not because these people are all idiots and none of them can perform this task. So, in 1960, they created their first foreign subsidiary in Canada. Paper manufacturers and coffee roasting facilities were also established in the United States and Brazil. I'm going to sneeze. They became the first company in Germany to offer ground coffee in vacuum sealed packages in 1962, which is pretty remarkable. Still going to sneeze. Nope. Okay. So they continue to press the envelope, no pun intended, with their brand, their coffee, their contraptions. It wasn't just creating a consumer product and really riding that one out. It was a consistent source for reinvention and improvement, and they still do it today. So they actually did enter the dust filter sector in 71, including the vacuum cleaner bags, and they rapidly expanded from there. In 73, they surpassed 9,000 employees for the first time, and then in 74, the paper mill in Berlin started. So like, they just, not only did they take on like other organizations to become an entity to provide a good or service to to exterior people, they also looked at their supply chain and how they could manage that, and they started to create their own supply chain instead of depending on vendors or suppliers to help them.
Damn.
Yes.
Like a pinky in the brain, take over the world.
Essentially. So in the mid 80s, they were present in 104 countries around the world, and Horst unfortunately passed away in 84. After that, the operative business was separated into legally distinct entities in 87, and the management holding was established. The paper manufacturer was one of the areas that were bolstered. So they've since parsed out their organizations like the Europeans do, and they have a parent company and they have many entities within, and this is how they currently operate today.
Okay.
Let's see. So they do have Tappitz, Swirl, Acclimat, and Celia as part of their branding then. Let's see. Yep. So if you go to the store today and you go to the, you know, the, what's it called? Coffee aisle, and you find a filtered box of filters that has the red on the top and a green body on the box, that is in fact the Melitta Corporation. let's see. So one other thing to note is, in 2003, Tappitz, they introduced a real all-rounder with its zipped freezer bag. So, Ziploc. Ziploc came to be from that. Not necessarily Ziploc the company, but the function. Yep. Yeah. All right. So, that's that.
Okay.
Ultimately, shout out to this wonderful, beautiful, amazing woman who decided enough was enough.
She was tired of tasting like she had sand in her mouth.
100%. It's gross too, because it's bitter and disgusting. Let's see.
Well, thank you for sharing that story.
You're welcome.
You happen to get her name from the reel that I sent you?
Yes.
Okay.
I went there first because I was like, these ones are heavy hitters. Let's go there.
Yeah. On the Homance Chronicles Instagram, we shared a story that was actually a reel from, I think, Female Quotient. Mm-hmm. At least initially, I think they are the ones who were spreading it around. But it was a guy who was saying, like, pretend that we're in a day in a life without women's inventions. And one of them that was featured was the coffee filter.
Yep, it's a good video. It really is. So, really quick shout out to my sources for today. Wikipedia, europeana.eu, New York Times, newletter.com, and ai.biz.io. Thank you.
Well, thank you for sharing.
Thanks for listening. Appreciate you.
I love, though, that they realized they could basically take paper as a filtration device. And now if you think about it, like, all of our filtration devices have
our paper.
Well, they're paper, but they've, like, evolved.
Yes.
So the core concept is still there. You put an air filter in your furnace. Inside of there is, like, a basically a paper, right?
Essentially.
So I wish I could just connect more on the fact that she loved coffee that much. I personally, if I were her, I would have just been like, I'm just not going to drink it. You know? She was like, no, I'm determined to have this coffee without a mouthful of sand. Instead of just walking away and being like, I'm just not going to have the coffee.
Yeah.
You know? That would be
that's
my
called
response.
Addiction. I'm going to be honest. That's addiction.
Oh, goodness. So, is it Attagirl time?
It is, girl. It is.
Attagirl is where we pat ourselves on the back for something good that we've done or something good that's happened to us. My Attagirl is that I have been letting people help me.
Oh, I'm proud of you. Mm-hmm. That's hard. Mm-hmm. That's really hard, especially for you. Atta girl. Mm-hmm. Round of applause.
Mm-hmm.
You
people were one of them. You helped me.
People at home better clap. Yeah, but I'm your help. That's expected. I'm going to force my way into your help, into your shit. You want help yet? Do you want any help? Can I help you now? Do you need anything? Can I do something for you? I'm just going to keep being that person. Yes, that's what you do as a bestie.
I mean, for the most part, I accept help because it makes the other person feel good. It doesn't usually help me.
You're not a burden. Just keep repeating, I'm not a burden. Yes.
Oh, no, I don't think that I'm a burden. I'm just so particular. And I don't like if I'm by myself, then I'm like, this goes here, this goes here. There's a whole plan. I've got a strategy, right? You insert other people, and then I just end up spending all of my time being like, put that there, put that down, walk away from that, you know?
Yep, I do know. I get it. You have to manage humans. That's why I don't ask for help either a lot of the times, because it's just easier, quicker for me, less energy to direct it than it is for me just to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm happy you're delegating. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I've hit a hurdle or a bend in the road, if you will, where I'm like, not all of these things are going to get done with just me.
Oh, you mean stark realization. That's what that was.
Yeah.
And then life came and said, boom.
Is questioning. So what's going to either not be done or could be done well enough?
Well enough. Well, you know where to find me if you need additional assistance.
I know. I know.
Good. All right. Well, I had a girl. Proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mine is also a thing where I let things sit. You know, when you get a bill in the mail, you're like, I'll call on this later. And then you never do. And then it's late. So I just went ahead and called it immediately today and remedied that lickety split here. So that was nice. And I don't have to pay it just yet. We'll see. His insurance company is fucking around and they're about to find out.
Funny.
Yeah. So that's that. It's minor, but it can snowball. So I'm proud of me.
Yeah. It is always nice when you have the capacity to be able to take care of those things right away, because otherwise it's kind of that thing on your shoulder, just whispering in your ear all the time. Yeah. Like, still got to take care of me. Still got to pay attention to me.
Yeah. Like my Delta reimbursements I haven't submitted for yet. Yes. That. Yep.
So it is nice when you can handle it upon arrival.
It really is. Just cross that one off our list. Not very many of those.
Oh, goodness.
All right. Well, thanks, Ho.
Yeah. Thank you. If you liked what you heard today, please rate, review, subscribe. It really helps us with the algorithms if you share us around.
We don't have a Patreon. We don't advertise. We ask you just give us love. That's it. That's all we need.
Yeah.
Tell your friends. Give us love. Share the wealth. We can do host stories if y'all need it. Just let us know.
Right.
Send some in.
Right.
We still got dynamicness. We're dynamic. Wow.
Yep.
Anyway.
And what's that thing? Oh, yeah. Bookstore. What where's that? Where's that thing? Oh yeah, the coffee aisle. That's where we're at today. You can follow us on Instagram at homance_chronicles. You can email us, Ho of History, that you'd like for us to cover at homancepodcast@gmail.com. And you can join the Facebook group. It's a closed group called the Homance Chronicles, a judgment-free zone.
The Homance. Oh.